What does it mean to be samurai? To devote yourself utterly to a set of moral principles. To seek a stillness of your mind. And to master the way of the sword. What would happen to your life if you only did one thing at a time, forever? This might sound simple or surface level, but think about it. One action at a time, with singular focus. Every time you drove your car, you drove it to the best of your abilities, trying to make your turns as smooth as possible. When speaking with a client, putting singular focus into delivering results, listening well, providing advice. With every line of code that you studied, or page of a book that you read, you pursued that knowledge with depth, forming connections between unrelated ideas to arrive at solutions which were original. Elegant. This would transmute across tasks, not just the serious but the mundane. Even each time you brushed your teeth, you would brush them to the best of your ability. Complete presence, complete mindfulness, to feel the aliveness of every moment, life in every breath. The word samurai originally meant one who serves, and referred to men of noble birth assigned to guard members of the imperial court. Over time, they emerged as the central figures of Japanese history, a romantic archetype similar to Europe's medieval knights or the American cowboy of the Wild West. But while the lives and conduct of ancient warriors may seem irrelevant to our lives today, the truth is, their devotion to their set of moral principles made them exceptional, and it's actually incredibly relevant. To live with a sense of insane focus all the time, that is the way of the samurai. And it'll change your life. So the first idea is the principle of no mind. Don't think, just do. The truth is, most of the time, our brains produce a ton of mental chatter, and it conflates it as things that should potentially be useful. And oftentimes, this chatter actually feels productive. It feels like you're getting somewhere because you're thinking so much. But if you really break down what your experience of life is like, most of the time, you can only do one thing at a time. The mind wanders a great deal, and that's fine. It sort of produces days where you live in like a dreamlike state. But actually, one of the most powerful things you can do is to not think at all. Practice no mind. And one of the best ways to practice no mind, where you actually turn that chatter off, is to just become incredibly present. Being powerfully present is so rare, and yet it is where all of your power is, in this moment right here, where you're truly living, where you're only taking one action at a time. And in the lifetime of the samurai, it was not an option. You know, they had to be present because warfare with swords, it was so immediate. If you hesitated, if you lost your focus for even a millisecond, it could mean your death. In any season of your life, if you find that you're doing too much planning, you're doing too much thinking, you'll realize you're also not being effective. Now, of course, some amount of planning is needed. You know, you do have to like maybe set a schedule. You do that once. You don't always be stuck in planning mode. The execution of life can only happen one task at a time. And when you're doing one singular task, what you'll find is you don't need to think, you just need to do. And we see references to this all the time. Of course, a very famous example in the last year is the movie Top Gun Maverick, where Maverick's character repeatedly tells Rooster, don't think, just do. When you're up in the air, if you think, you're dead. That's actually real. If you're actually being very intentional with life, your intuition and your flow state will take over. It will guide you, and it'll guide you better than you probably could yourself. So practice no mind. Stop thinking so damn much. The second idea I want to share with you is to make your actions effortless. Now, this concept is technically Taoist. It's called Wu Wei, taking effortless action. But I think in Miyamoto Musashi's book, The Book of Five Rings, he talks about this idea of the way many times. He references it. There's the way of the pen. There is the way of the sword. There's even the way of the merchant and the way of the farmer. So there's like a correct way of doing all things. What he's implying here is a sense of effortlessness. When you're doing things in the way, you're sort of moving with the flow of things. You're moving with the current of the universe, and you're not necessarily being so abrasive. Now, discipline has its place, and sometimes discipline means doing things that you don't feel like doing in that moment. But living in the way is what we should be doing the majority of the time. As a child, I once went to a religious gathering, and it's one that I'll never forget, because my parents would bring me to these sort of lectures all the time, where you're going somewhere and some Indian priest or sage, he's giving some words of wisdom. And most of the time, I couldn't keep up. It would either be in very formal Hindi or it'd just be way too high level for me. But there was one sage who I was able to understand really well. And he said, you know, one of the best indications that a student is going to do well in his class, he's going to crack his exam, he's going to get an A, is if when you're studying, you start to enjoy the studying. And I thought to myself, I was in high school when I heard him say that. I was like, you know, it's actually kind of funny, because most of the time, studying is not my choice of activity. Maybe it would be going to hang out with my friends or watching a movie or literally scrolling YouTube. But there would be times in high school where I would start studying. It could be for anything. It could be like anatomy class. And I would start to enjoy it. I would just find myself being like, dang, I'm like memorizing these words. I'm rewriting this vocabulary. I'm trying to remember it. The Golgi body or whatever it might be. The endoplasmic reticulum. This is the way the cell membrane works. It's hydrophilic, hydrophobic. Like I would have all these ideas start to make sense in my head. And it started to become fun. Even math problems. You know, I always hated math. But when I could see how different pieces connected, if I'm doing some proof in like a calculus class, it started to become fun. It was really weird. That's the cool thing about this. You can actually enjoy so much in your life that you think of as tedium. It can actually start to be a joyous process. Imagine if you took all of the tedium in your life and you became very present with it and you started to make it effortless, then it leads to the best results. I mean, the person who is studying out of pure hatred and just like gotta get it done, just studying for a result, probably will not be able to compete with the student who's maybe studying for a result, but then also starts to love the process, you know, starts to love the actual craft, the learning, the studying of what is happening. I also find that effortless action prevents me from overtraining in life in any capacity, because when things are effortless, you're not really getting to those grinder stages of the action that you're taking. You're kind of hitting things at an 8 out of 10 level. And in fact, in my own YouTube coaching academy, I often tell my students, get to an 8 out of 10 level. Like, get to an 8 out of 10 level of whatever you're doing. You know, like, if you're making a thumbnail, make it to an 8 out of 10 level. If you're working on a video and a script, if it's gotten to a goodish place where you can sort of feel that you've put in a certain amount of hours into it, leave it there. Because what I've found is that getting to an 8 out of 10 level of any activity, it takes a good amount of effort, but like, not a crazy amount of effort. But squeezing down those last 2 points of quality from an 8 out of 10 to a 9 or a 10, like a perfect thing, it takes double the amount of time. It takes so much more. There's like a law of diminishing returns when it comes to just effort. And those days where you do try to produce something at a 10 out of 10 level, you go all out, it actually prevents you from being able to work as well the next day. If you go too hard on one day, you always find that the next day, it's like you're just in a daze. You're not producing work as well because you kind of push too hard on one day. It's why I actually think you produce the overall volume of the most amount of good work in literally anything when you just do the basics, when you just get to like 80-ish, 90-ish percent. In fact, in a previous video of mine called Do the Basics, Get 95% of the Results, I talked about this idea of how when you try to grind out those last few points of quality on any one thing, you find that you just end up spinning your wheels. You don't produce your best work. And there are people who actually operate at a very high level who often stop at good enough, even people you and I might desperately admire. Christopher Nolan, for example, is very well known for coming under budget on his movies. Like, he doesn't go over budget because he doesn't do a crazy number of takes. In fact, people have often been surprised when they'll do a take of like some action scene or something really big, or even any scene of a movie, and he'll get like 4 or 5 takes and he'll say, all right, we got it. And he'll move on to the next scene. And often the AD or some producer might be like, do you want another take or should we get it? And no, we got it. It's good enough. He stops at good enough all the time. And I think the reason his movies are often very effective is because he makes the process largely effortless. And the cool thing about this is when you actually live your life with a great deal of presence and you also allow yourself to stop at good enough, like you just get to a goodish amount of value and then you stop, you actually don't produce 8 out of 10 level work. It often ends up being 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 because that presence in combination with being effortless, being in flow state, actually makes you incredible. The third principle I want to talk about is cultivating and trusting your intuition. Steven Spielberg once said, "The hardest thing to listen to is your instincts, your human personal intuition, because it always whispers, it never shouts. It's very hard to hear. So you have to, every day of your lives, be ready to hear what that whisper in your ear is. It very rarely shouts, and if you can listen to the whisper, if it tickles your heart, we will benefit from everything that you do." I'm not sure where this quality comes from, but like a lot of the best results in my life have come from like a very intuitive place. It's been easy for me, and I've often been following some sort of hunch. Even in the last week, as I've been trying to practice the ideals of the samurai more intentionally, I've been noticing this happen where I would turn to my business partner and I would tell him, "Hey man, I think we should actually go work from this coffee shop today." So we would head down to a coffee shop. Currently, he and I are working on a pitch deck for a $1 billion company. Like, we are actually doing our first like very high level pitch for one of these like Fortune 1000 companies to do video agency work for them. And it's super intimidating, the process. So I wanted to work at a place that gave me a sense of like inspiration and awe. And one day I had a hunch to just leave the pad and go work at a coffee shop. This nearby coffee shop that looks really aesthetic. And I ran into a client of mine who gave me a piece of intel for something else. Like, it actually led to meeting up with someone I needed to talk to anyway. And it was like a very good positive day. That day, I also trusted my intuition and stopped by at this camera shop. And I started talking to one of the salespeople there. And I learned that this new lens that kind of solved some of the things that I'm looking for with a new style of shooting, Sony was releasing this new lens, the 50mm 1.4, that would be perfect for some future gimbal work that I want to do. It was like that perfect in-between lens combo. And I learned about it just because I followed an intuition. Now, these are small examples, but it happens all the time where when you're deeply connected to your intuition and you just kind of follow that whisper in your heart, in your head, you just end up getting all these ideas that are way better than you would otherwise. Like, using your sense of logic to create solutions is of course very valuable, but listening also to this intuitive feeling of maybe we should do this thing this way, or even just like for some reason I should go into this place, this coffee shop today, and talk to this person, it often leads to some of the greatest quantum leaps in your career. Most things that we do that are logic based, they give us a linear amount of growth. But those times where we get a good hunch and we act on those, you get that quantum leap. This is very tied to the culture of the samurai, the values of the samurai, because they valued stillness a ton. And they approached life from a place of quiet, like letting the noise come down, both the noise from your thoughts and also just like noise in the world, coming from a place of stillness, because when things get still and quiet, you can actually listen to yourself and you can actually produce your best ideas. So some of the things that actually helped me cultivate my stillness and my sense of intuition to a very high level are, one, sleeping to completion. If you can get your sleep like fully dialed in and get a full night's sleep as often as possible, nothing helps you activate and tap into your subconscious, your superconscious more than just being well rested. And it's kind of a rare thing to do. Like, if you really prioritize your sleep or use something like a sleep tracker, you'll realize most people, most of the time, they could probably optimize their sleep even more. And I think getting up to 8 full hours of sleep, which means kind of being in bed overall for 9 hours, is optimal. Like, it will produce the best ideas you possibly could. The other one is meditate as much as possible. I personally think it's okay to meditate for up to an hour a day. Now, most days I don't, probably do around 20, 30 minutes most days of the week, but you could meditate up to 1 hour a day and it would not be a waste of time. In fact, it would be an absolutely excellent use of your time. The third thing is focus on doing one thing at a time, which is of course how this video kicked off, with focus, doing one thing at a time, because that creates presence, and that presence leads to results. Additionally, you should also spend time in nature, or spend time in places that give you a sense of awe, like sense of literal wonder connected to space. And lastly, if it feels weird, you get this sense of like, why do I feel like doing this right now? Like, why do I feel like going to this coffee shop or messaging this person? Is this an email I should send? It absolutely is something you should do. If it feels like it's just intuitively coming out, like, I kind of feel like doing this, you should 100% do that thing. It's here I want to take a brief pause to talk about the Captain Sinbad YouTube coaching program. We're about to start up our 6th and 7th cohorts of our academy, and students across our first 4 cohorts have gotten some amazing results. There's been someone within every cohort who, within 1 or 2 videos, often their first video in the program, has broken 200,000 views. And the reason I put this pitch here is because a lot of what gets students results is I ask them how they feel about their work, or I ask them how they feel about a particular thumbnail. In fact, I ask them to cultivate their visual literacy and their sense of intuition about why something should hit, why something should smack all the time. And because I've been doing YouTube for a while, I've actually been able to call this out like many times, at least 8 times at this point, where I'll say, hey, this video, it makes perfect sense. This video should take off in the algorithm. And it does. Like, we've got the recordings where I'll literally call out, hey, this video should take off. And it genuinely will. And that's because we pursue YouTube in a very different way compared to the other guys. We try to produce work that we ourselves are proud of. And even with titles and thumbnails, I like to say, hey, do you like your own title? Do you like your own thumbnail? Is this something that you would want to click on? If you could go off that, one realizes that the algorithm is just people. And so if you can start being more connected to your videos in what kind of a more emotional, true way, you start getting better results. Additionally, one thing that's been really amazing about our program is that students are learning to build out their business side of YouTube in addition to getting the views. My business partner, Manoj, actually runs an entire second half of the academy where he teaches online business and he teaches what products, what services that students can build out to actually monetize their channel and monetize it well ethically, where it doesn't feel cheap. It just feels very connected to what they're working on. And in fact, we've had students where they might only have 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 subscribers, and they might only be getting a certain thousand number of views per video. But because it's connected to a great business backend, a number of students at this point have broken $5,000 a month in revenue for like 3 months straight. One or two of our students have even gotten $10,000. They've just started crossing that $10,000 in a month revenue range. So it's been really amazing to see both the getting of the views and how to build a business off of YouTube. We've been getting success with our students on both ends, and that's been really exciting. If coaching with me is something that you might be interested in, we're starting to look at applications for our next cohort starting up in May. If you think you're a good fit, if becoming a full-time YouTuber and having a great business side to your channel is something that is important to you, then we'd love to chat further. The last principle I want to share with you is to live impeccably. Present yourself perfectly. Approach every task with unshakable determination. Perfection is a strange thing to aim for. We often don't wake up and think, oh, I'm going to make today perfect. But the truth is, you actually have the option to wake up and potentially make each day a masterpiece. I'm not sure why it happens, but we just sort of settle into a sense of maybe like inherent grumpiness. You know, you get up and you get out the door, you get into traffic right away, or it feels like a lot of what your day has in front of you is just obligation. Like, I have all of these obligations. My life is just a series of obligations. And so it's very easy to settle into the sense of like, here's just what I have to do today. But the truth is, you could like set the intention of making each day exceptional. And sure, we still have our obligations, but just simply setting the intention kind of changes how the universe responds to you. I know that sounds a little bit hokey, but I read through this book, The Swordless Samurai, and in it, the author has this line, approach every task with unshakable determination. Because that was actually the way of the samurai. They aimed for perfect conduct. You would even recognize this if you saw this movie, The Last Samurai. Nathan Algren, he talks about in his time spent with these people, these very spiritual and disciplined people, they sought perfection in everything they did. Maybe not perfection in terms of like getting to 10 out of 10 level of effort, but just conducting yourself as well as possible. When I can get my mindset right, I actually start thinking to myself, what if I made today exceptional? Almost like as if it's a meme. Like, what if I made this day exceptional? It's even happening to me right now as I make this video. I'm like, dang, what if I just like poured myself into this video as opposed to just phoning it in, which maybe in the past I might've done. There was actually a study done at the University of Texas, Austin on basketball players. It was titled Choking and Excelling at the Free Throw Line, which suggested that trying to avoid a negative outcome and trying to attain a positive outcome had different effects on performance. So what they had is players at the free throw line, they had a career average on how often they made a free throw, which is the same shot every time. What they found is that players tended to shoot the shot better than their career average if they were down 1 point. If their team was down 1 point, then statistically the odds were that they would perform better than their career average at getting the ball in. If they were tied or if they were ahead 1 point, then they would perform below their career average. Which is to say, if the player was trying to avoid losing, the team was already ahead or was tied, if they got it in, they would just avoid losing. They wouldn't, you know, get the team to lose their lead. They performed worse. But if you were down a point, statistically, you would perform better because you were trying to gain that edge to win. And it's just a mental shift. We do better when we play to win and not play to not lose. I actually have to give a shout out to one of my clients and YouTube buddies, Joel R, in this video here, who pointed out this study to me. But if you go into life and you go into each task, assuming victory, assuming it's gonna go well, or at least having that determination that it's gonna go well, then your results end up being a lot better. Now, I arrived at this video script because I sort of was looking for a reason to to really like myself. I'm in a season of my life where I do genuinely feel pretty good about myself, the work I do, the way I treat people, the way I treat my team. I think I'm doing a good job in life these days, but I want to be exceptional. And sometimes I find inspiration in turning to almost like a sense of mythos, you know, like these legendary figures, these romantic historical figures like the samurai. It really speaks to me. And no matter how disconnected people like the samurai or the medieval knights they might be from our current timeline, maybe even the ancient Stoics, it may seem like they lived up to an ideal that isn't easy or isn't relevant to us anymore. It's actually very fun and very rewarding to aim for it, especially living a life with a sense of incredible presence, effortless action, and having that intention to just go into things wanting to win. It's a really lovely way to conduct yourself, where you just live life impeccably. You live yourself true to some virtues. Honor was a big term for the samurai, and I kind of had a hard time labeling, like, what is honor? We don't really fight for honor in our lives anymore. Maybe the closest thing we have is status. But I would say honor is even greater than status, because honor is your self-respect being put into action, and that's a very powerful thing. And so for those of us who do live this way, who put our self-respect on the line, who conduct ourselves in line with some principles that we really believe in, and come back into this moment with focus, to us I say, greatness is coming. We'll catch you soon.